Now, as ever, a Teen Wolf fanfiction by Venus Envy. Chapter 2. In all the chaos of the morning, Styles has still managed to retain the understanding that somehow, just by being here, he's created a paradox that could potentially change everything he knows. It's something he's thought about countless times before. What child who's lost someone close to them hasn't considered what things would have been like if something else had been done differently? But Styles has seen that movie, has read that book, has imagined himself in that situation, and no matter how tempting the idea would be, and all the scenarios he's ever dreamt himself into, another life-altering tragedy replaces the one his imagination has tried to diminish. Being here could be detrimental to his future, to his own existence, but Styles can't help the draw. He just wants to be close to her, just one more time. He can't help but wonder if maybe that's why he's here to begin with. If maybe the universe shoved him 10 years into his past just so that he could have one more chance to be near her, to really appreciate her before she's gone again. His mother used to go to the library every Saturday morning and read to groups of children there. Sometimes she would even dress up as a character from the story. Styles would always come with her, but he'd rarely ever sit and listen. Instead, he'd wander up and down the aisles, flipping through picture books or sit at the table in the corner and put together puzzles, or draw until something more interesting caught his attention. He walks into the library behind a group of people, unnoticed by the two librarians at the front desk. Styles sits around the corner from the children's section, careful not to be seen, but not so far away that he can't hear her voice. One of the books she's chosen to read today was Roaring Rockets. Styles doesn't remember, but it was sitting on the table beside her empty chair as he passed by. Instead, she reads Where the Wild Things Are. Styles has never been so mesmerized by the sound of a voice before, and he wonders how his 7-year-old self could possibly want to pass up the opportunity to hear her speak. And he sailed off through the night and day, and in and out of weeks, and almost over a year. Styles doesn't know how long his self-control will hold before the need to round the corner and rest his head in his mom's lap will be too much for him to resist. He dries his eyes and leaves the library. It's all too much for him to take in. Mentally exhausted, emotionally drained, cold and alone, Styles goes back in the direction from which he came. He can't remember what happened to land him in the past in Beacon Hills, and he doesn't know how to undo it. He's got nowhere to go, so he heads back into the forest. Maybe he'll find something there, a hint of how this started, a sign of how to return to 2013, anything. He's always been told that if you're lost, you should go back to the last place you were known to be and stay put. And Styles has never felt so lost before. It's bizarre how reassuring the lonely forest of the preserve feels to him now, after the morning he's had, out in the open, surrounded by familiar strangers. The trees, the creek, the forest floor, they're all the same in this moment as they are 10 years from now, and Styles takes comfort in that and that alone. He loses himself in the woods, and whether it's deliberate or not, he can't really tell. There's no room in his crowded thoughts for more worrying, least of all about how he'll find his way out again. Out is not where Styles wants to be. He sits down beside the creek, hugging his knees to his chest and watching the steady ripples in the water. Hours pass, and the only thing Styles has to measure the time is the steady chill of winter air settling in his bones. The golden sky is no longer visible through the canopy of bare branches above, replaced now by a dull, gray emptiness. It's snowing, tiny flecks of glitter sparkling through the air and disappearing before they touch the ground. Styles is cold. Not the kind of cold that makes one want 100 blankets, but the kind that makes one wish for death. Deep down to his bones, Styles is freezing. His hoodie isn't enough to protect him against the elements, but he folds his arms on his knees and tucks his face into the crook of his elbow anyway, welcoming the tiny bit of warmth that echoes from his breath into the fabric and back against his icy lips. He's long ago past the point of shivering, teeth chattering to the point where he's worried he might chip one. His body is tense, muscles aching from trying to circulate enough blood to keep him warm. He knows that's a bad sign. His thoughts are jumping track erratically, unable to stay focused on one thing for longer than a few seconds. Styles has never wished to be a werewolf before, never wanted it, even after all he's been through. But in this moment, he's never wanted anything more. The accelerated body heat would be so nice. He knows even Scott would be cold out here, but not this cold. Scott. Styles tries to focus his thoughts on his friend, wondering what he's doing right now in this moment. Is he out searching for Styles? Or maybe just sitting in the living room at Derek's house with Isaac, waiting for a phone call? Do they even know he's gone? Or would they all have assumed the human living in the midst of the paranormal finally had enough, and Styles ran away? Styles' thoughts skip to a time years ago, or maybe just 4 years from now. He doesn't know the proper way to think of it. He was 11 and at Scott's house for a sleepover, Styles' first real sleepover since his mom's accident, when they decided to see if the movies were right and you really could start a fire with just two sticks. Impatience and a lack of attention span had turned those two sticks into two matchsticks in no time at all, and when Scott's mom had caught them, they got the reaming of a lifetime. She would have taken Styles home right then if it weren't for the fact that his dad was working overnight. She'd banished them to Scott's room, where they promptly packed a pillowcase full of video games and Cheetos before climbing out his bedroom window. They learned pretty quickly that, in the dead of winter, a pair of runaways couldn't live on Cheetos alone, and they were home before Mrs. McCall even knew they were gone. "What are you doing here?" a voice comes from somewhere close behind Styles, pulling him out of his memory. Fueled by the sudden startle of adrenaline, he jumps to his feet and turns, only to be shocked into a backward stagger at the sight that greets him. "This is private property." It's Derek Hale, saying those same words he said to Styles and Scott the first time they met him. Only this version of Derek is different. He's younger, less muscled, less stubbly, not as angry and hostile in appearance. Styles instantly has to stomp down the urge to throw himself at Derek, wrap his arms around him, and sigh in relief. I'm sorry. Derek tilts his head, eyes narrowed. "Just what?" Styles' thoughts are playing out in his mind like scenes of a movie, flipping in rapid succession from one to the next. What will he cause, or has he already caused, by allowing this young version of Derek to see him? He's trembling again, from the cold or anxiety he can't tell. Unable to find anything else to say, Styles settles on a partial truth. "I don't have anywhere else to go." Derek raises an eyebrow, crosses his arms over his chest, and looks around. "You're alone out here?" Styles nods. "It's freezing. Are you insane? You lost or something?" To this, Styles laughs dryly. "More than I could ever explain." "Well, come on," Derek says, turning and walking away. "I'll take you to town. Where do you live?" I don't really know. I can't remember. He hopes this young teenage version of Derek isn't yet in tune with his senses enough to be able to read a lie, but from the look he casts over his shoulder at Styles, that probably isn't the case at all. Styles knows he should probably turn and run the other direction. Derek isn't dangerous, not to someone who isn't posing any real threat. He wouldn't chase after him. But God, Styles just doesn't think he can stand being alone for another second. He's cold and scared and so fucking confused. And Derek is familiar, his presence comforting, even if this is a version of Derek Styles doesn't really know. "Do you have a name, or did you forget that, too?" Styles breaks into a jog to catch up to Derek. "It's Styles," he says. "Styles? Is that your first name or your last name?" asks Derek, his pace not slowing as he weaves between trees and around bushes. Both, sort of. Derek laughs, and the sound of it actually causes Styles' steps to falter. "What, like Madonna?" "Something like that, I guess." Styles bats a swinging limb away before it smacks him in the face as Derek plows on, creating his own path through thick brush and flimsy branches. It isn't until they come to the edge of the forest that Derek finally introduces himself to Styles. "I'm Derek," he says, coming to a stop in the middle of the dimly lit road. "This is my family's property. You're welcome to get lost in it any time you want, but I really don't recommend it." Styles nods. He isn't ready to say goodbye, and he really doesn't know where he's supposed to go now. "I haven't seen you around school," Derek says. "You must be new to Beacon Hills." "Not really," replies Styles. Derek narrows his eyes. He knows something is off. Styles shifts uncomfortably under his scrutinizing gaze. He hopes Derek will chalk up any odd behavior to the fact that Styles' body is still protesting against the icy night air. "Well, Madonna, Pink, Styles, whatever your name is, if you're lost and not even sure where you live, you should probably let me take you to the sheriff's department." "No," Styles says too quickly. "I mean, I'd rather not be that kid, you know. I'm sure I can find my way now." Stiles' stomach drops to his toes at the thought of being alone again, having nowhere to go, the possibility of actually dying of exposure. Derek watches him for a moment, and Stiles tries his best to steady his breathing and keep eye contact. "Right," Derek finally says. "Well then, maybe you could just come back to my place with me. My mom's pretty good with weird things. She might be able to help you." Stiles actually feels his heart skip a beat at the mention of Derek's mom. He hadn't exactly had the chance to consider the fact that his past wouldn't be the only one whole again for the time being. Stiles forces a weak smile. "Thanks." Meeting Derek Hale's family won't be the strangest thing that's ever happened to Stiles by a long stretch, and Derek has already seen him, so anything he may mess up in the future by being here now, well, the damage is already done.